This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. It's peak hurricane season as Florence makes landfall in the Carolinas and a handful of other storms roil the Atlantic. Some communities in Florida and Puerto Rico are still rebuilding more than a year after last year's hurricane season. So what do these powerful storms tell us about what to expect in future hurricanes? Are they a sign of things to come as the oceans warm? And how are communities rebuilding and planning to be more resilient? We're talking about climate change and hurricanes, and we want to hear from you, comments and questions on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. Well, joining us today is South Miami Mayor Philip Stoddard. He's Professor of Biological Sciences at FIU. Mayor Stoddard, thank you for joining us.
Hi, you're very welcome.
We're also joined by Chris Emmerich. He's a Professor of Environmental Science and Public Administration at the University of Central Florida. Chris, thank you so much for coming back.
Good morning, Matthew.
And journalist Cynthia Barnett is the author of three books on water. She's the Environmental Fellow at the University of Florida's Bob Graham Center for Public Service. Cynthia, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.
You can join the conversation too. Reach out with your comments or questions on Twitter. We're at WMFE Orlando. You can call us as well, 1-866-338-5252. What are you thinking about this hurricane season as we see these powerful storms come in? And of course, Florence making landfall this morning in the Carolinas. I want to start by playing a little bit of sound from a story reported by 90.7's Amy Green, our environmental reporter. This story aired this week on 90.7 News. Amy travelled to Everglades City in South Florida to report on how that town of just over 400 residents is rebuilding to become more resilient to hurricanes. Here's coastal planning specialist Thomas Rupert.
There are a lot of different ways that if we acknowledge these problems now, that we can actually save people money, hopefully keep people safer. Because the longer we continue to pretend that our coastal areas and the hazards they face are not changing, the more we are promoting a future where events will be increasingly catastrophic.
And Rupert went on to tell us that what worked in the past as far as planning for storms won't necessarily work in the future.
What the science tells us now about both sea level rise and climate change is that the past is not necessarily a very good guide to what's coming down the road in the future.
Well, residents of Everglades City told 90.7 that they believe that city can come back stronger than before. Here's Tony Pernis. He's the chairman of a locally appointed committee overseeing the recovery in Everglades City.
10 years down the line, I think it's just going to be a much more resilient community. Everybody's going to be up on stilts. There's not going to be this panic next time a hurricane comes and we're having to worry about storm surge. The roads will probably be elevated.
That's Tony Pernis talking to 90.7's Amy Green. You can find her reporting on our websites, WMFE.org. Well, Mayor Philip Stoddard, I want to start with you. As a city leader, what have you done to get people thinking about the consequences of a changing climate and the immediate effects of things like king tides, storm surge, and the attendant weather effects that come with these powerful hurricanes?
Well, you know, the hurricane we had last year, Irma, really did the job for me. My job was really providing information to the residents. But there's nothing so convincing as living through a storm. And we've seen that both in the small city of South Miami, but particularly in the city of Miami itself. Having 5 feet of water down the main street of the city of Miami, Brickell, really changed people's minds about the risks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the situations where you can tell people for years and years, we've got to do something. And it just doesn't feel real to folks until they get a storm in their city and they see the effects themselves. And it's the same way with climate change nationally. The thing that convinces people is when it hits them.
I'm wondering, though, I mean, even when you have these storms like Irma, even Florence, we're hearing now, some residents, even though they've been told to evacuate, for example, they're like, we're staying put. And Chris Emmerich and I were just chatting before we went on air. He was saying that, you know, there are going to be more rescues. Some people just don't want to move. And when a big storm comes through, even when there's catastrophic flooding, they have to be rescued. Philip Stoddard, do you get the sense that even when a big storm comes through, there are still going to be some people who are like, I'm staying put. I'm okay where I am.
Oh, well, you always see that, especially down in the Florida Keys. You know, they may be getting 10 feet of water through, but there are folks who insist on staying put.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the problems we had last year was that we got evacuation orders that came in, and they were so coarse in their spatial scale that many people up on high ground were told to evacuate when they really should not have. Mm-hmm. And this is a matter of improving the fineness of information that's given out to people. Yes, you're in a low area where you could get storm surge, and no, you're in a high area, hold your ground if you think your house is strong.
Right. So getting a little more detail on those flood maps, perhaps.
The maps are good. That's not the problem. The problem is the emergency alerting services don't take into account the fine grain of the maps. And this erodes credibility. And that's why people stay put. They say, I've been told to get out so many times when nothing happened that I just don't believe those warnings anymore. And it's sort of a cry wolf problem. Mm-hmm. But I think it could be resolved in part by providing finer grain information to people.
Is that what you're trying to do down in South Miami then?
Absolutely. So when we got when the county gave the emergency order, I didn't tell people evacuate or don't evacuate. I gave them better information. I gave them the federal information to the residents directly with a local map overlay, and so people could see for themselves what the risks were. Mm-hmm. And when they saw that, the people who were in the low areas who were thinking they might stay put, they decided, no, this is real. I better get out. And the people in the high areas who are at no risk of flooding said, well, I'm not hitting the roads given that the water's coming nowhere near my house.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Mayor Philip Stoddard of South Miami about the impacts of big storms and the effects of climate change. I want to hear from you as well. We're at WMFE on Twitter, and you can reach out to us on at our number 1-866-338-5252. As well, are you one of those folks who look at a big storm coming and say you've got the preparations done and you want to stay put, or are you a little bit worried? Are you maybe thinking long term, am I in a place, is my house in a place that I necessarily want it to stay, or am I thinking about moving? We want to hear your stories too. If I could bring you into this conversation, Chris Emmerich, obviously anytime one of these storms rolls ashore, the biggest effects are going to be felt on the coastline. But what are some of the other impacts? What about sort of further inland?
I think with this storm, we're going to be looking at almost like a Harvey-type event, because this storm is very, very slow moving, and it's going to be dumping mass amounts of water into inland South and North Carolina. This water has nowhere to go. When it compounds, when the soils are filled, we will have a lot of flash flooding incidents across a broad part of southern and eastern North Carolina, and I would guess most of the state of South Carolina. So that's a big threat to be looking forward to over the coming days.
Mm-hmm. So that is, I guess, an illustration of the fact that you don't necessarily have to be living on the coast to be feeling the impact of a powerful storm, or maybe storms that are going to become more frequent.
Correct. And I think the big new scientific term is this idea of compound flooding. So it doesn't take a huge inland riverine event coupled with a not huge storm surge that can cause catastrophic consequences when the water's trying to come downstream and water's being pushed in, and the water has nowhere to go. It pushes out into the low-lying areas.
And some of those totals, some of those heights that the storm surge is getting up to, they're quite stunning, right? Like sort of 9 to 13 feet, that's very high.
It's interesting. The federal government provides estimates of storm surge, but their top category is greater than 9 feet. So we don't know past that. Is it 9 feet? Is it 13 feet? Is it 20 feet? So only time will tell, and we're quickly pulling in data to understand the extent of these storm surges, but certainly it's going to be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could bring you into the conversation, Cynthia Barnett, journalist and fellow at the University of Florida, just kind of thinking about how you tell the story of, first of all, hurricanes, and then tying that into the bigger picture of climate change. How do you do that? Is it an easy subject to get across to people, or is it something that people struggle with a little bit?
No, I think climate change is one of the most difficult stories of our time to tell, and what the other guests have already said is very much true. It's once Americans and Floridians are impacted by one of these events, whether it be a hurricane here in the southeast or a great wildfire in the American West, it is these very personal stories that are helping people understand the bigger picture. But if I could follow up on Chris's point about flooding, one of the things that's important here, I think, to talk about is that this is a conversation that we need to have all the time, right? And not just in hurricane season. So one of the things that is changing in a warming world is the frequency of downpours. For example, Florida and the southeastern United States are seeing about 27% more downpours, really heavy rain events now than we saw 50 years ago. And these are the kinds of things that are changing our daily lives, not just our lives during hurricane season. So the weird thing to me is, you know, these hurricanes come in the wake of hurricanes. We have a great unifying spirit, right? We work together, neighbor helping neighbor. We help each other clean up. The question is, can we come together that way all year, all the time, to work on this more existential threat of climate change?
So you've been reporting on the subject for quite some time, Cynthia. What's your sense of the answer to that? Do you have an answer? Do you feel like people can wrap their heads around this big problem?
I do. I mean, we know from the statistics on what people believe about climate change that more and more people are very much open to learning about climate change. Really, only about 9% of the population are absolute dismissers of climate science and knowledge about climate change. And this is from the Center for Climate Change Communication at George Mason University, which does excellent work on public belief. So there's this 9%, but it's a very intense 9%, and it's a quite vocal group. But many of us are coming together on climate change. I think you see it especially, again, like the mayor said, in places that are being impacted. And I hope more Floridians in the central areas of the state can also see the impact. So, for example, where I live in Gainesville or where you guys are in Orlando, again, it's the more extreme downpours. It's the greater degree of flooding. One day soon, it will be the population growth as more and more people migrate from the coast to the interior of Florida. So there are all these reasons for all of us, whether we live inland or on the Florida coast, to really be thinking about this in the bigger picture and not just during hurricane season.
We're talking to Cynthia Barnett. She's an environmental fellow and environmental journalist in residence at the University of Florida, talking about climate change, the impact of hurricanes, and what effect that might have on folks' decision to live in certain places in the state or even other parts of the country. I want to hear from you too. The number is 1-866-338-5252. You can reach out to us on Twitter. We're at WMFE Orlando. Comment here from Cody writes in, love the story. I'm hoping you can ask your panel how climate change and these events will affect the long-term economies of these coastal cities like Miami. Personally, I'd be apprehensive moving to these cities, knowing their vulnerabilities. Well, Philip Stoddard, Mayor of South Miami, let me ask you this question. Are you seeing anything as far as just anecdotal evidence that people are deciding to leave or that, you know, it's made an impact on people's decision to move to a coastal community like South Miami?
Well, you know, I can give you anecdotes on both sides. I know people who have decided to leave and people who've decided to move here. And I think it really depends on your time horizon and particularly on your economic intentions. So, for instance, if you want to buy a house here and make money on that house, if you see real estate as an investment, then your time horizon may be 30 years. If you're a young family and you want to buy a house and hold it for 60 years, that's different. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's an economic story with a time constant.
Even 30 years, though, Chris Emmerich, that if you're thinking about these kind of changing climatic conditions, that isn't actually too far into the future, and things could be quite different by then.
You're certainly right. I think that people have a different cognition of risks, and some of the things we're doing in the Sustainable Coastal Systems Cluster at University of Central Florida, we're working with engineers, political scientists, economists, biologists all around these topics to try to understand in these different cognitions or views of the world how people deal with this information. And one of the things is to try to give people risk information in 30-year segments so they can equate it to a home mortgage.
Right.
How often are you expected to see flooding over the next 30 years? That really kind of gives them a little bit more detail to go on. And the hope is that we give people good risk information and they make smarter decisions about the biggest investment of their life, which is buying a property.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's going to change. I wonder if buying a property may not be the biggest investment you make at some point in the future.
Well,
I mean, there's the fact is that eventually the coastal areas do go underwater and the value of land goes to zero. And so, you know, it used to be, the expression in real estate used to be nobody loses money in real estate. They may not live long enough. And that's changing. I mean, mm-hmm. land values at some point will go to zero. And you can look at the shape of the function and you can make some guided guesses about what's going to happen economically to the communities and the values of property. But eventually it does go to zero. And it may be sooner than we think. It may be longer than we think. But that's a different way of looking at property investment than we've ever had to look at before.
So when communities talk about, you know, putting in expensive pumping systems to, you know, drain the roads if they get flooded, or even elevating roads, putting buildings up, building kind of barriers to channel water when you get these storm surges, Philip Stoddard, does that just seem a little bit futile to you?
Well, you're buying time, and time has value. So my view actually is that we should be investing heavily in that sort of infrastructure now while the bond rates are low and while we have a good horizon to pay it back. I mean, nobody wants to loan you money when there's water lapping at the door, but investments now will produce the biggest payback over time. So if you're going to do this kind of infrastructure improvements, now is exactly the time to be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia Barnett, if I could bring you back into the conversation. I mean, talking about trying to get these ideas across, Chris Emmerich is talking about sort of telling people about risk and telling that story in a way they can mm-hmm. understand. Mm-hmm. You're doing essentially mm-hmm. the same thing, right? You're trying to translate some of this complex information and make sure that people can grasp it and understand it. How challenging is that for a journalist?
Yeah. Well, I think one way of doing this is to look at past societies and current societies that are sustainable, and that's something I've tried to do a lot of in my work. I've traveled around the world trying to report on this, on solutions that are underway, and I think the Netherlands is a really interesting example of a culture that, you know, lived below sea level and dealt with extraordinary flooding over the history of the nation and really came together in a way to protect itself from flooding. And the interesting thing about the Netherlands to me is this decision, which I don't know if we're really willing to talk about this. I don't hear very many people talk about it, but this idea of planned retreat. In the Netherlands, there has been, you know, flooding of agricultural lands, for example, with fair compensation to farmers. There's been this sort of bigger picture planning than we seem able to do in Florida. We tend, you know, even if you look at things like our, I can't remember how many ports we have. We have like 16 ports, and they're all over, and they're always competing with one another. It's sort of how Florida has grown in these spurts and different communities for themselves. There is a better way, and we can see it in various parts of the world and various parts of our own state and country where we kind of come together and make these decisions of what places should be given back to the sea and what places will remain that are as prosperous as possible. So I'm not sure I agree that all real estate goes to zero. I think it will if we don't plan wisely. But if we do, you know, you can imagine some kind of wild futuristic cities at the sea and above the sea, right? Where we've left some parts to nature and built up resilience in those maybe even a set of islands, right? A set of islands all over South Florida that remain. So there's all kinds of creative ways of talking about this and thinking about this. And I think we kind of get stuck in the status quo of how we've always done it in Florida. And there, you know, there are really some bold ideas out there that are exciting. So those are the kinds of things I try to do. Would be to, you know, write about other parts of the world and write about some of the exciting thinking that is going on in Florida's universities, such as that Chris was mentioning.
I want to just read a tweet from one of our listeners here. Sharon writes, an interesting topic as my family is in the process of selling parents' home in the city of South Miami. So, Philip, I'm not sure what the sort of thinking is behind that sale there, but sounds like somebody is moving there. Chris, I see you nodding your head when you hear Cynthia talking about planned retreat. I mean, are you seeing any of that kind of planning going on in Florida, at least?
Well, I like the idea. And we need to look at mitigation a few different ways. We have, of course, structural mitigation, and let's spend a lot of money on structural mitigation right now. But I think there's this idea of social mitigation and other ways that we need to approach this topic. I mean, when we went to the moon, they had to redesign everything to go to the moon because it was different. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a similar type situation. We need to erase the board and kind of start over and say, what are the options? And really give credence to things like planned retreat and social mitigation, whatever that means, training people to understand the risks so they make better decisions. Has it worked in the past? Not always, but we're at a precipice right now that needs a lot of different solutions.
I mean, just thinking about the Netherlands with its system of dikes, and obviously people have a different approach to the sea there, but you have similar communities in the United States, right? I mean, like New Orleans springs to mind. How well have they kind of coped with designing around the fact that a lot of the areas are pretty low-lying?
I mean, the Netherlands is doing great things. The problem is, and the mayor can speak to this, the geology of South Florida is not the geology of the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Stoddard, we've got just a minute or two left, but if you want to just jump in there.
I think the biggest thing we're not discussing is the economics, and that has to be brought into all of these discussions. So, yes, we could build islands in South Florida, but it's a lot cheaper to move to Orlando, frankly, or move to Atlanta, and I think ultimately, people make the final decisions with their pocketbooks. And for the Netherlands, has nowhere else to go. I mean, I've been to the Netherlands and talked to them about this, and they say our alternative is to move to Germany, and we don't want to move to Germany. So we have no choice but to make these investments in infrastructure and be innovative.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, we do have choices. And for a young family looking where to live, if it costs three times as much to live on one of these artificial islands in a coastal area than it does to move inland, where are they going to go? Where are the companies going to resettle? Mm-hmm. And I think that those sorts of economic decisions are going to make many of the decisions for us. You know, so when we talk about planned retreat, we really have to be looking at urban planning and community development. How do we, as cities inland, accommodate the influx we're expecting? How do coastal cities like the one I'm in, how do we ourselves pull back from the low areas and maintain robust services?
Well,
those are the questions.
Yes, some big questions and more to discuss, to be sure. Philip Stoddard is the mayor of South Miami. He's a professor of biological sciences at FIU. Philip, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Also joined by Chris Emmerich, Professor of Environmental Science and Public Administration at UCF. Chris, thanks again.
Thank you.
And journalist Cynthia Barnett, author of three books on water and environmental fellow at the University of Florida's Bob Graham Center for Public Service. Cynthia, thank you as well.
Thank you so much. Good to talk to you all.
And coming up next on Intersection, is Pluto back in the Planet Club again? A UCF planetary scientist says it should be. many more asteroids too. Intersection is back in a minute. This is Intersection, I'm Matthew Petty. Jordan Foley's been part of the Orlando music scene for a couple years now. The DeLand-based singer-songwriter now has an album under his belt, and he's just put together a band. Foley joins us with a song called I'm Still Going.
I actually wrote it about spoiler alerts in movies. I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, and when The Last Jedi was coming out, I was really excited. And the problem was that I couldn't go see it the day of. I had to go see it the next day. And one of my friends, and I, you know, say that with quotes, one of my friends actually texted me the day before, the day that it came out, and said three things that happened in the movie and spoiled the movie for me to that degree. So I went home really upset from work, and I sat down and I wrote the song about how, you know, even though you can have something spoiled for you, you should still go and still give it the credit that it's due. And so I wrote that I'm still going no matter what. So don't spoil the movie for me now. I don't want to know how it ends. I waited too damn long just to find out. So don't you tell me anything. Oh, I'd like to erase the mistake I made. Iterating that one line in your message. Gonna take it back 1,000 times, but I still know exactly what happens in the show. I can't bring back that feeling anymore, but I'm still going. I'm still going. All the plot twists they got spoiled away. I know you didn't save the day. Might have been harmless, but I'm still the same as I was in that old picture frame. Oh, I'd like to erase the mistake I've made. In reading that one line in your message. Gonna take it back 1,000 times, but I still know exactly what happens in the show. I can't bring back that feeling anymore. I'm still going. I'm still going. Villain becomes the hero in the end. The underdogs become champions in the end. The couple falls in love in the end. We know there's a sequel, so it's not the end. Would I like to erase the mistake I made in reading that one line in your message? Gonna take it back a thousand times, but I still know exactly what happens in the show. I can't bring back that feeling anymore. I can't bring back that feeling anymore. No, I can't bring back that feeling anymore. So I'm still going. I'm still going, yeah. I'm still going, yeah. Oh, I'm still going.
Well, Jordan Foley, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's good to be here.
So you've got an album under your belt. Are you touring with it at the moment?
Mainly in the Orlando area. I've been writing for a long time and just getting my name in the, you know, my foot in the door in Orlando, playing some songwriter series shows around town, doing cover shows at various venues and bars and restaurants. And within this year, I started traveling around. No absolute tour set. I did go up to Nashville for a week with some of my other friends who are also singer-songwriters, like Layla Brisbois. She set us up. And we all took a trip up there, got an Airbnb. We had a week of shows, so that was awesome. That was like a dream come true.
How do you classify your sound? You're kind of in the folk, the Americana, a little bit sort of the country mold.
Yeah, I think folk Americana kind of hits the nail on the head. I do have some country, some alt country, old country vibes, sounds to it. There are some undertones. But, you know, I'd like to classify it as folk Americana. I mean, I've been very influenced by the folk bands of this era, Mumford & Sons, City & Color, mm-hmm. Shaky Graves. And then you get into, like, the outlaw country, Sturgill Simpson, you know, Jason Isbell. So I'm very much influenced by them, and I've tried to, you know, kind of mold my own sound. Not to emulate theirs, but to, you know, have some sort of relation, yeah.
I don't think, though, I've ever heard a song that kind of evokes country. It may not necessarily be country, but yeah. the key ingredient is Star Wars.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a country flavor there. I mean, there's a kind of a sense of loss.
Yeah.
And you're talking about Star Wars.
Absolutely. There is. And, you know, Star Wars is very dear to my heart. And it's actually pretty funny. I play with a violinist in town, Tanner Johnson.
He was on our show.
Yeah. With, was it with?
Yeah, Luke Wagner.
Yeah, he's a really good friend of mine. Luke and I are very close. And I, you know, Tanner and I play as well. And sometimes, you know, Tanner's on the album. And when we go and play that, the way that it works, the chord progression, the key or whatever it is in, he can throw in Star Wars theme songs into the song.
Mm-hmm.
Bah, 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 and I'm like, that's hilarious. Everybody loves it.
Is there a bit of a folk Americana revival going on in Central Florida right now? There seems like there's a lot of talent out there.
I really do think that there is a bit of a new guard coming up, and we're all influenced by the old guard. And I hate to call them old guard because they're not even old, like Thomas Wynn and the Believers and Mike Dunn and Kaylee Baker and, you know, Beth McKee, Swamp Sisters. You know, like, they're in the now, but we're trying to, like, you know, come up with them. I met Mike Dunn a few years ago, and I asked him, you know, what do I have to do to just get involved and get into the community so people start to know me and want to hear my music just along with yours? And he said, just be there. He said, just show up. He said, go to Will's Pub, go to Little Indies, go to all these venues that, you know, the Imperial, go to these places and just listen and introduce yourself. And before you know it, people will start to welcome you. I was in grad school doing a project and I met Beth McKee. I was actually interviewing her for her show. And she had mentioned that she started this songwriter series. I asked her, you know, hey, if I gathered some songs and I sent them to you, would you consider having me for the songwriter series? And she was like, absolutely, just send them over. When I graduated from grad school, I was like, all right, I'm just going to take a shot. And she kind of gave me my first chance. It was at the Smiling Bison in Orlando. It's no longer running, but they have one in Sanford now. But Beth gave me a shot. And I think it's all just a growing community.
And you've got a gig coming up.
I do. So Jordan Fully in the Wheelhouse will be playing at Will's Pub this Friday, along with Wes Morrison and the Stray Hairs and Luke Wagner and the 441s. That's the start of my weekend. I have three shows this weekend. I play a house show Saturday at my friend's house. And then Sunday, 2 days ago, I got asked to play at the Sing Out Loud Festival up in St. Augustine on Sunday. So I'll be driving up to St. Augustine to play my own songs up there. So I'm really excited for that, too.
Well, Jordan Fully, thank you so much for joining
us. Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This song is called See You Letter. I wrote it a couple years ago. It's the single track off of my album, Give to Get a Day. Sometimes I wish you sever the tie, cut me off by closing all the blinds. Now I have to stay away one more time.
That's Jordan Fully with a track called See You Letter. To hear Fully perform another track from his new album, head over to our website, wmfe.org/intersection. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Shania Richburg. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast, and we're on the NPR One app. I'm Matthew Petty. Follow me on Twitter at Matthew_Petty, and thanks for listening.
Every time that I say goodbye, I find myself looking at the ground. Cause I try to fight every tear I hold back, cause I know you want me to say, see you later.
This is Intersection, I'm Matthew Petty. Jordan Fully's been part of the Orlando music scene for a couple years now. The DeLand-based singer-songwriter now has an album under his belt, and he's just put together a band. Fully joins us with a song called I'm Still Going.
I actually wrote it about spoiler alerts in movies. I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, and when The Last Jedi was coming out, I was really excited. And the problem was that I couldn't go see it the day of. I had to go see it the next day. And one of my friends, and I say that with quotes, one of my friends actually texted me the day before, the day that it came out, and said three things that happened in the movie and spoiled the movie for me to that degree. So I went home really upset from work, and I sat down and I wrote the song about how, you know, even though you can have something spoiled for you, you should still go and still give it the credit that it's due. And so I wrote that I'm still going no matter what. So don't spoil the movie for me now. I don't want to know how it ends. I waited too damn long just to find out. So don't you tell me anything. Oh, I'd like to erase the mistake I made. In reading that one line in your message, gonna take it back 1,000 times, but I still know exactly what happens in the show. I can't bring back that feeling anymore, but I'm still going. I'm still going. I
all the plot twists they got spoiled away. I know you didn't save the day. Might have been harmless, but I'm still the same as I was in that old picture frame. Well, I'd like to erase the mistake I've made in reading that one line in your message. Gonna take it back 1,000 times, but I still know exactly what happens in the show. I can't bring back that feeling anymore. I'm still going. I'm still going. Villain becomes the hero in the end. The underdogs become champions in the end. The couple falls in love in the end. We know there's a sequel, so it's not the end. Would I like to erase the mistake I made in reading that one line in your message? Gonna take it back 1,000 times, but I still know exactly what happens in the show. I can't bring back that feeling anymore. I can't bring back that feeling anymore. I can't bring back that feeling anymore. So I'm still going. I'm still going, yeah. I'm still going, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh. I'm still going.
Well, Jordan Foley, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's good to be here.
So you've got an album under your belt.
Are
you touring with it at the moment?
Mainly in the Orlando area. I've been writing for a long time and just getting my name in the, you know, my foot in the door in Orlando, playing some songwriter series shows around town, doing cover shows at various venues and bars and restaurants. And within this year, I started traveling around. No absolute tour set. I did go up to Nashville for a week with some of my other friends who are also singer-songwriters, like Layla Brisbois. She set us up, and we all took a trip up there, got an Airbnb. We had a week of shows, so that was awesome. That was like a dream come true.
How do you classify your sound? You're kind of in the folk, the Americana, a little bit sort of the country mold.
Yeah, I think folk Americana kind of hits the nail on the head. I do have some country, some alt-country, old-country vibes. Sounds to it. There are some undertones, but you know, I'd like to classify it as folk Americana. I mean, I've been very influenced by the folk bands of this era: Mumford and Sons, City in Color, mm-hmm. Shaky Graves. And then you get into like the outlaw country, Sturgill Simpson, you know, Jason Isbell. So I'm very much influenced by them, and I've tried to, you know, kind of mold my own sound, not to emulate theirs, but to, you know, have some sort of relation. Yeah.
I don't think, though, I've ever heard a song that kind of evokes country. It may not necessarily be country, but the key ingredient is Star Wars.
Yeah.
And there's a, definitely a country flavor there. I mean, there's a kind of a sense of loss.
Yeah.
And you're talking about Star Wars.
Absolutely, there is. And, you know, Star Wars is very dear to my heart. And it's actually pretty funny. I play with a violinist in town. Tanner Johnson.
He was on our show.
Yeah, with was it with?
Yeah, Luke Wagner.
Yeah, he's a really good friend of mine. Luke and I are very close. And I, you know, Tanner and I play as well. And sometimes, you know, Tanner's on the album. And when we go and play that, the way that it works, the chord progression, the key or whatever it is in, he can throw in Star Wars theme songs into the song.
Mm-hmm.
Bah, 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 and I'm like, that's hilarious. Everybody loves it.
Is there a bit of a folk Americana revival going on in Central Florida right now? There seems like there's a lot of talent out there.
I really do think that there is a bit of there's a bit of a new guard coming up, and we're all influenced by the old guard. And I hate to call them old guard because they're not even old, like Thomas Wynn and the Believers and Mike Dunn and Kaylee Baker and, you know, Beth McKee, Swamp Sisters. You know, like, they're in the now, but we're trying to, like, you know, come up with them. I met Mike Dunn a few years ago. And I asked him, you know, what do I have to do to just get involved and get into the community so people start to know me and want to hear my music just along with yours? And he said, just be there. He said, just show up. He said, go to Will's Pub, go to Little Indies, go to all these venues that, you know, the Imperial, go to these places and just listen and introduce yourself. And before you know it, people will start to welcome you. I was in grad school doing a project and I met Beth McKee. I was actually interviewing her for her show. And she had mentioned that she started this songwriter series. I asked her, you know, hey, if I gathered some songs and I sent them to you, would you consider having me for the songwriter series? And she was like, absolutely, just send them over. When I graduated from grad school, I was like, all right, I'm just going to take a shot. And she kind of gave me my first chance. It was at the Smiling Bison in Orlando. It's no longer running, but they have one in Sanford now. But Beth gave me a shot. And I think it's all just a growing community.
And you've got a gig coming up.
I do. So Jordan Fully in the Wheelhouse will be playing at Will's Pub this Friday, along with Wes Morrison and the Strayhairs and Luke Wagner and the 441s. That's the start of my weekend. I have three shows this weekend. I play a house show Saturday at my friend's house. And then Sunday, 2 days ago, I got asked to play at the Sing Out Loud Festival up in St. Augustine on Sunday. So I'll be driving up to St. Augustine to play my own songs up there. So I'm really excited for that, too.
Well, Jordan Fully, thank you so much for joining
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This song is called See You Later. I wrote it a couple years ago. It's the single track off of my album, Give to Get a Day. Sometimes I wish you'd sever the tie, cut me off by closing all the blinds. Now I have to stay away one more time.
That's Jordan Fully with a track called See You Later. To hear Fully perform another track from his new album, head over to our website, wmfe.org/intersection. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Shania Richburg. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast, and we're on the NPR One app. I'm Matthew Petty. Follow me on Twitter at Matthew_Petty, and thanks for listening.
Every time that I say goodbye, I find myself looking at the ground. 'Cause I try to fight every tear I hold back, 'cause I know you want me to say, see you later.